Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at some physical therapy issues today, and we'll be looking at some research studies and how you can look beyond the headline of some of those studies. And a couple of great guests for you. Back once again, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum and Laurie Tyne-Brody in the studio with me today. Jill, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Laurie is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. So, do you look closely at study results? Have you been fooled by conclusions that maybe weren't supported by the data? I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments, or maybe you've got a physical therapy issue you want to discuss. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can post on our Facebook page. Email us at ideas@wpr.org as well. Jill, nice to have you back.
It's great to be here. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And Laurie, great to see
awesome.
You again.
Happy to be here as well.
Well, Jill, let's start with you for a minute. You wanted to talk about a new study that was published in the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery.
Right. There was an article that was published in JBJS, which is a very respectable journal.
Yeah.
And it came out looking at marathon runners. And basically what it said is that marathon runners don't get arthritis. They don't show signs or symptoms of arthritic changes in their knees and hips. And if that was all you considered, you might say, wow, running, there's no association between running and arthritis. But then what you have to think about is what happened to the cohort of individuals who stopped running because they got arthritic changes. Where did those people go?
Yeah.
Those people weren't surveyed. And so what we know is that there's a group of people out there who can run a really long time and into their 50s and 60s, and they're fortunate enough that they have no signs and symptoms of arthritis. But that doesn't mean that you can do that, that you can run until you're in your 50s and 60s and you're guaranteed not to get arthritis.
Right. It's really important to look at the facts, not the alternative facts.
Right.
The show's going to be about real facts, no alternative facts.
No fake
today.
News.
No fake news today. But that's why it's important to look at the details of some of this research. And one of the things we tell our students is that you can't just read the abstract because the devil is in the details. So you may read something and run off and say, oh, I'm going to do this with my patient without really thinking about if that applies to the patient that you see. But Jill's point was really important in that people who had arthritis, and we know that 65% of arthritis is heritable, that those people have dropped out of running. It doesn't mean that if you run, you're going to be able to run a marathon into your 60s. There's too many other factors. It doesn't mean you shouldn't stay active. But
exactly. But I think with this world of we're constantly plugged in and we're constantly getting news feeds and we're getting that quick and dirty, that small little snippet of news, you may have something that feeds into you. And if you only read that part of it, without knowing the details, you may actually be somewhat misinformed.
Yeah, and newspapers and magazines and so forth, they're writing shorter or television
mm-hmm.
or
exactly.
radio, they're short pieces, and so they're going to take the piece, the part that looks the most appealing to the eye or the ear.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And so when you're scrutinizing a journal article, there's always all good journal articles are required to have the author identify the limitations of the study.
Yeah.
And it's important that if you're really interested in that topic or you think that that topic could somehow impact your life, that you go and you read those limitations, because that will help you better scrutinize the article or understand that it may not be as rosy as you first thought.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
So be a little careful.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. There was an article that came out that was talking about how to best strengthen one of the muscles in your hip. And we like to make our gluteus medius strong, and we like to kind of keep the muscle that goes with our IT band, our tensor fascia lata, quiet. And if you just read the abstract, you would think, oh my goodness, I need to give my patient exercise B, because that's the one that came out the best. But if you comb through the article and you look at the actual data, it may be clinically significant, or it may be statistically significant, what they found, but is that difference between exercise A and exercise B really clinically significant? Mm-hmm. So as healthcare professionals, it's important that we look at those things to make sure that we're providing the best care for our patients.
Yeah. Right. There was a similar situation at the shoulder where there's a classic exercise that we do to strengthen the rotator cuff called the empty can. So you raise your arm with your thumb down. Well, if you don't do the exercise quite right and you lift a little too high, you actually increase the impingement in your rotator cuff. But that exercise showed the highest percent EMG. However, if you go again and look at the details of it, that highest EMG was in a fully overhead position, which is the position we never train people in because it creates impingement. Whereas if you turn your thumb up, which is a safer exercise to do, you have nearly the same EMG without the impingement. So again, if you only read the abstract and don't go into the details, you can be strongly misled.
Kind of going along with this, Don from Wakanda called to say his son is thinking about becoming a PT. What schools do you suggest and what other advice do you have?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm not sure how old Don's son is, but all physical therapy programs are post-baccalaureate. Most of them are entry-level doctorate programs. So you do need a college degree prior to admission. There are a few programs that are hybrid, where you enroll as a freshman and you go all the way straight through. We have five and a half programs, because there's another program under consideration here in Wisconsin. So we have quite a few programs in the state of Wisconsin. The best place to go for a resource is probably the American Physical Therapy Association website. And then Don's son should also start contacting schools in which he's interested in applying. Most people have an admissions counselor to make sure that he is fulfilling the requirements.
Yeah.
And all physical therapy programs not only have didactic requirements, but they have volunteer requirements, things like that. So you want to make sure that you have dotted all your I's and crossed all your T's prior to admission.
And physical therapy, like medicine itself, has a lot of subspecialties.
Yeah.
So you can work in a school system with kids in a school system. You can work in a NICU, in a neonatal intensive care with newborn babies. You can work in nursing homes with the elderly. You can work in outpatient clinics. You can work in spinal cord units. So getting experience in a broad range of areas so you understand the breadth of the field, I think, would be helpful.
And for a bachelor's degree, are there degrees that are probably better able to help you down the road or not?
You know, yes and no. There's certain degrees where most of the requirements for physical therapy are housed within that undergraduate degree. We have quite a few students in the program who major in things like kinesiology or biology or chemistry, one of the sciences. But having said that, we also get students who have degrees in things like dance, theater, real estate, accounting, and they've taken the required courses as well. And so it just takes you a little bit longer to get that bachelor degree. But you can do either. It's totally fine. Doesn't make a difference to us as long as you fulfill those requirements.
I was just thinking about a couple of my students from Life Sciences Communication that graduated and were accepted into medical school.
Sure, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yep.
We have an opera singer in our class.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's we have all sorts.
Well, Anne in Madison emailed to ask if there's physical therapy available for someone with diabetic peripheral neuropathy to help with lifting the feet up to reduce tripping and falling.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a fairly common problem that we see. So we work with patients with gait training. So there's a whole number of exercises from strengthening to postural awareness. One of the issues with diabetic neuropathy is you don't always know where your feet are. So we do some specific exercises to help with your balance and coordination and knowing where your feet are in space so that you don't catch your toe on a rug or a cord or going up a curb. You understand where your foot is relative to the step. So absolutely, that's a fairly common thing that we treat.
Right. And unfortunately, Wisconsin ranks very, very high in states with the number of people who experience a fall. We're very, very, for whatever reason, very high risk. And so there's a lot of therapists where working with patients who are at fall risks is certainly on their radar.
Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today. We are talking with them about all kinds of physical therapy issues. We took a look at some research studies. And certainly if you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain, I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Jerry emailed to say he's a walker. He's tried to walk 3 to 5 miles a day. He has had to replace both hips and both knees. So the notion that exercise will prevent arthritis, he feels is a fantasy. Age will eventually catch up with you, he says.
Well, you know, we go back to genetics. So however well Jerry picked his parents has
and
some
it looks
effect.
Like poorly. If he's had two hips and two knee replacements.
And then you also have to look at lifestyle. Up to this point, I don't know what Jerry's line of work was, but there are certainly some lines of work that we know have a higher incidence of arthritis, farmers being one of them. They tend to have a much higher incidence of arthritis. So having a sports injury will increase the likelihood of arthritis. So you combine genetics and family history. So, you know, it's interesting. He still walks 3 to 5 miles per day. You know, you wonder how he would have fared had he not been doing his walking.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope he's still walking for his muscle strength, for his function, for his cardiorespiratory health. It's all good. If you look at the breadth of research, there's one thing we can hang our hat on, and that exercise is significant in reducing many lifestyle-associated diseases.
And it's just really a matter of finding the exercise mode that is best for your joints and your body.
Yeah.
You wonder sometimes, with the football games yesterday and so forth, I wonder how many, like, professional football players, as an example, wind up with arthritis.
Well, it's interesting. We do know that professional football players who have a meniscectomy, so they have torn their meniscus and they remove that part of their meniscus, have a much shorter life expectancy in the NFL. And that's more than likely because of that. So that probably starts the downward cascade into arthritis in their knees.
Coming up, we're going to be talking with June from Crystal Lake, and then we'll be taking your questions as well. Larry Mueller here with my guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. June in Crystal Lake, Illinois, we go to you. Thank you for waiting.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
Yes, I have a question. About 3 years ago, I have a carpal tunnel surgery on one of my hands, and it solved the problem at that time. It doesn't hurt anymore. But this past year, when I'm working with the increase of my usage of the mouse and the computer, I'm starting to feel that it's hurting again, the same hand. So just wondering what kind of recommendation can I get from the physical therapist?
Mm-hmm. Did you have any splints or anything like that that you used prior to your other surgery?
No, but after the surgery, yes, I did, but it didn't help, so that's why I have the surgery.
Okay.
And this past year when I'm working and using the mouse, I've been wearing the splint on my arm, on my hand,
okay,
when I'm working with the computer.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the things you might need to do is look at your setup with your mouse, maybe changing the style of mouse that you use. You need to also look at your posture and make sure that it is carpal tunnel. It's also possible that it could be coming from someplace else at this point. So you could be having issues at your neck that are causing symptoms farther down your hand that look like carpal tunnel. So it may be worthwhile to go in and have somebody look at this. If it's been going on for a year, I'd probably go back to whoever you saw for your carpal tunnel initially and have them do a reevaluation, see if it is carpal tunnel, see if anything has changed since they saw you last when you had your surgery, and then examine your neck as well to make sure that the symptoms aren't actually originating from someplace else.
Uh-huh. And then I would certainly check your workstation, mm-hmm. because that, if you're going to be in one position for a prolonged period of time, we want to make sure that it matches your body. So that might be a factor as well.
And then the interesting thing is it's possible that led to your symptoms in the first place,
right.
as your workstation. And you had surgery, it was better. And now that you're back at your workstation in the same bad setup or ergonomically incorrect setup, that it's been enough to stir up the symptoms again.
Yeah. Good tips. Thank you very much for calling. Good luck, June. Appreciate your call. And Chris in Watertown up next. Hi, Chris.
Hello. Hello, all of you wonderful people. There was the research of sort of a line across the United States from Chicago up.
Yes.
That people don't get enough vitamin D and calcium or whatever because of lack of sunshine.
Yes.
And now there's controversy over people taking vitamin D and calcium supplements that it doesn't help them. I would very much like your opinions.
Well, that's a great question. So our number one source of vitamin D is indeed the sun. So, we do live north of that line that they drew where it shows that, especially in the winter, we have difficulty acquiring adequate vitamin D through the sun. The other thing is, even if you live south of that and you wear sunscreen, as you should, it blocks about 95% of the vitamin D that you should acquire from sunlight. So even if you don't live, or if you do live in an area where there's sunshine and you wear sunscreen, you're still potentially not getting enough vitamin D. So vitamin D is one of those...
fat soluble.
Thank you. Vitamins that we do... Most of the time we say get this through your diet, that we do encourage people to take through a multivitamin or take cereal or milk that are vitamin D fortified. There are many products out there that have vitamin D in them. So this is one of those unique ones where we do really encourage people to get it through some sort of supplementation.
Agreed. And I don't know about the super supplementation. You know,
right.
There are those who say, oh, you should take... two or three times the recommended dosage. The last I read from Center for Science and the Public Interest, their research did not support that in terms of the longitudinal studies. However, that being said, I don't think there has been a large enough cohort of people who have done that for long enough to really know what the long-term outcomes are in terms of health and wellness.
Right. Okay. And it, as Chris mentioned, it does need to go along with acquiring adequate calcium. And calcium can only be, your body can only absorb a certain amount of calcium at a time. I believe it's 500 milligrams. And so, you can't take a whole bunch of calcium supplements in the morning and think I'm good for the day. You need to take your calcium intermittently throughout the day. And most people encourage you to take your vitamin D at the same time.
If you're talking about bone health.
Correct.
Because intake has been associated with a host of other diseases.
And musculoskeletal weakness, fatigue, all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
There we go. Thank you, Chris.
What kind of calcium?
You can take any type of calcium. The best source is, again, through diet. So dairy products. We live in the dairy state, so it's pretty easy to get your calcium through yogurt, cheeses, milk, things like that. If you don't take in a lot of dairy, you can take any calcium supplements. It doesn't have to be any special kind. Just look at how much calcium is in a dose per se, so you're very familiar with how much you're taking from a dosage perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Margaret in Milwaukee, I believe it is your turn. Hi, Margaret.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment. I recently had a daughter in November, and before that, I spent 15 weeks on bed rest. Which was really challenging, and I was worried, how was I going to get through labor? How was I going to recover from this birth? And about 7 or 8 weeks into it, I requested to be able to go to a physical therapist just to see if there were some exercises that I could do safely. And my doctor was on board for it, so I was able to do that. And I just thought, man, it would have been nice to have done this from the beginning.
Right.
So I guess just sort of, you know, getting that into people's minds to think about that, to try to think of safe ways to, you know, not lose that muscle tone if you're going to be laying around for a while, and what your thoughts are on that. And then also I'm sort of looking forward and wondering what kind of, how long it might take my body to get back to 100%. Like my back is pretty weak.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, the in terms of your last question, the rule of thumb, the general rule of thumb, is at least twice as long as you were on bed rest. So at a minimum of 30 weeks.
Right. But then you throw in the fact that she was pregnant and,
and whatever
issues before that.
Yep.
And yes.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And how long does postpartum last? Some people say years.
Right.
Exactly. I'm totally on board with that.
Right. Right. Yeah. So I'd say, yeah, that's what you're looking at if you're setting goals. So, you know, don't think you're going to be, you know, back on the treadmill in 3 weeks. So, and in terms of the PT, you know, absolutely good for you for requesting that, and good for your physician for supporting it. There are physical therapists who specialize in women's health. So, you know, not only could they discuss the the types of exercise that she should do, but given that she was pregnant, the kinds of exercises to keep her pelvic floor healthy, the kinds of things that she would need to get through labor and delivery, and the things that were safe for her, given that she apparently had a high-risk pregnancy.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much for calling, Margaret. And on to Tom in Orange Beach, Alabama.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I've been bothered by plantar fasciitis. I had it a couple of years ago, and I haven't been bothered for quite a while. And now it's starting to act up again, and I was wondering if you have any suggestions.
Can you correlate your recent increase in symptoms with a change in activity, or can you associate it with something that you've done or are doing?
I'm afraid it was in December I went too long without shoes.
We can't do that.
Yeah, we can't do that here.
Yeah, we don't have that problem.
Yeah, we feel so sorry for you.
I'm sorry.
That could be very causative.
Yeah, that's a fairly classic thing. You know, we see that in the summer, people switch from their supportive winter boots to their flip-flops. And next thing you know, they have plantar fasciitis. So the first thing is recognizing the cause of the problem. So, A, get back in shoes. And you probably got that far already, huh?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So
my doctor had prescribed some orthotics, and I have those in my shoes, and that really helped for all that time. And
great.
Again, the barefootness.
Right. So you got to get back on the train.
So the orthotics help. And so thereafter, we like a good plantar fascia stretch. So if you sit with your, you know, ankle crossed over your other knee and pull your ankle up and pull your toes up, the other great way to do that stretch is to face a step and put your toes vertically on the vertical part of the step and then flex your knee forward over that. You get a nice stretch in it. And the other big thing that we recommend, and that a recent meta-analysis has supported, is the use of a night splint.
Yeah.
Have you ever tried that?
Yes, I ordered one. I didn't bring it along with me because I hadn't been bothered for so long, so I ordered one.
Oh, okay.
So
That? Is it one that goes on the back or the front?
The hard surface is towards the front.
Great. Okay, good. Yeah.
I think you'll like that better.
Yeah, you'll like that. That's a nice one. So,
I've also been vacationing.
Oh. You're vacationing.
And you got plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
What a bummer.
Yeah. Really. I've been using struts. Have you heard of struts?
Struts. Tell me what they are. Yeah. Describe them.
It's a little band of cushioned art support, and then there's a little rubber kind of ball that goes by the heel.
Okay.
Underneath, and that really, really is comfortable.
Okay. Is that something you put in your shoe?
Yes, you put it over your sock, and it's an elastic strap, and it says shock-absorbing gel foam core.
Okay.
Okay.
And you use that with your orthotics as well?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and
it kind of massages the foot as you walk.
Okay.
And it might support his fat pad, too, it sounds like, in the back.
Yeah, so, kind of give you a little support to that. All right, that sounds good. So, you know, the night splint, they say 2 to 3 months. So, you know, when you feel like, I think I flared my plantar fascia a little bit, you can slap that night splint on if you catch it early. And, you know, maybe in a week or two, you're out of the woods as long as you have your shoes back on.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. But, so good job being proactive and getting right after that the minute your symptoms came on.
Yeah. Perfect.
And I've been limiting my walks. So this morning we only did a couple miles. So.
Okay. Yeah. And if you ice when you're done and break your walking into a couple shorter sessions.
Yep, I think you're on the right path.
Like that.
Okay,
all right.
Real good.
Good
all
luck.
Right.
Thanks,
awesome.
Tom.
All right, have fun.
Yep. Appreciate the call. And lots more callers online. You can join in, too, by the way. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. On to Eric in New Berlin. Eric, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, Larry. Thank you for taking my call. I have cerebral palsy. I walk with lost strand crutches, the ones that go over your forearm, not your armpit. Mm-hmm. And on Christmas Eve, unfortunately, I suffered a fall, suffered a compression fracture of my L1 vertebrae, which is the one closest to your butt.
Yeah.
Oh.
So
S1.
S1?
S1.
Okay. I'm sorry. And I've been just... So it's been almost a month, and I've been in my wheelchair, and I found it hard to get in for physical therapy. The place that x-rayed me never seemed, because I have to get rides.
Sure.
And I was wondering, I was thinking of going today, actually, and looking at weightlifting belts. I do seem to be healing. My range of motion is a lot better. And I was just wondering, I think maybe a back brace would be a little too cumbersome, but something like a regular belt where I could, except more sturdy, something that I could get on and off easy, just like putting on a regular clothes belt. I have a stepbrother that does a lot of weightlifting, and I happened to think of that the other day.
Yeah.
I wondered if that would help me.
I think that's definitely an option. Before I would go out and purchase one, if you have a belt that's bigger than what you would normally wear, I would try and take just a regular leather belt and lower it around that area and cinch it and see if that helps even a little bit. And then the SI belts, which is probably what you're going to want as a sacroiliac belt, they're even a little wider than a standard leather belt. And I think that's a good idea. I think it would offer you a little bit of stabilization, especially when you transfer, when you go from sit to stand and things like that.
Otherwise, borrow your stepbrothers for a while.
There you go. Yeah. It's even better.
Yeah. Yeah. And see how that feels. And then if it's at all possible, getting in a pool would be dynamite for you. You know, doing walking and unweighting in a pool and moving to keep your strength and mobility up.
Okay.
I don't know if that's something that you have access to, but I think that'd be a really good strategy for you.
Okay. Are there any kind of exercises I could do at home, maybe? I was a little bit skeptical because I thought, well, physical therapy is not going to really heal a broken bone, but I'm willing to try anything. I've had lots of physical therapy in my life. I'm 52 years old, and I have cerebral palsy, so I think...
Well,
the
idea is that physical therapy isn't going to heal your broken bone, but what we're going to do is maintain your range of motion and your strength and your mobility while your fracture heals, so that when your fracture is ready to go, you are too. So instead of being up and walking on your loft strand crutches, and I've been sitting in a wheelchair, so chances are your hip flexors are tight, you've got weakness in your glutes, maybe some loss of mobility in your hips. So physical therapy would work with you to help keep you fit and strong, so that when your back is feeling better, you are ready to go. And we're not fighting the secondary consequences of immobilization. Mm. Just like Margaret, who was on bed rest for 15 weeks. Essentially, you've been on some sort of forced bed rest since this fracture. And now it's going to take a while for you to recover from that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
good luck.
Absolutely.
Okay, a sacroiliac belt, huh?
Yeah. Start with your stepbrother's weightlifting belt, though, and see how that works and
go from there.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Yep. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Adam in Green Bay next. Adam, hello. Oh, we lost Adam.
Uh-oh.
Or did we? Adam, are you there? Yeah, must have lost Adam. Let's see. Other callers here. Barbara in Appleton, I think, is up next. Barbara, hi.
Hi, thank you.
Sure, what's on your mind?
Well, about 8 years ago, my ankles were giving me trouble, and the doctor said I had bone density there. It was weakening, my bone density in my ankles. So I've always, he would tell me he could give me certain things, but I'm not, I don't like to take any drugs.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. We just, would you call back? I just lost you. We'll get her back, and we will do this.
We have new technology.
We have new technology, and
yeah,
sometimes
we should have my kids here running it because I don't know how to do it.
I don't sometimes either. It works really good, and sometimes I push the wrong button or something. Now we've got Linda in Coloma. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Well, I got neuropathy on my toes, and not my whole foot, but just my toes. And I was wondering if there's any therapy or something that would work.
Is that diabetic neuropathy?
Yes.
Okay. So, yes, there is. With physical therapy, in your case, would probably focus very much on balance. You use your toes a lot to balance you and change directions. So people who have neuropathy in their toes and or feet are at high risk of falls. And if you live here in Wisconsin in the winter and snow and ice and black ice and everything else, then you have a double risk. So physical therapy would focus on making sure that you're strong in the muscles that will help keep you upright and stable. And they'll give you some what we call balance and proprioception exercises to help you know where you are in space so that you decrease your chances of falling.
Right. And the other thing is they can make recommendation about shoe wear and footwear to make sure that your foot is well protected, since you probably have some decreased sensation and you don't want to be stubbing toes and things like that. So they can make recommendations about shoe wear as well.
And it doesn't have to be a long, ongoing thing. It can just be two or three visits to get some exercises to do at home and then a follow-up to see if those are working and to progress and modify those as needed.
All right.
Okay, who do I call for the therapy then? I mean, the doctor or the therapist?
Probably depends on the insurance.
Right. I would probably start with your physician that manages your diabetes and explain the situation to them and say, I'd like to get in to see physical therapy. And they probably have a group that they refer to. But you'll want to do that and double check with your insurance and make sure that you have everything covered.
Alternatively, you can call a physical therapy clinic locally in Coloma. I'm sure there's either a hospital-based physical therapy department or an outpatient physical therapy department, and you can call them and explain your situation. They will ask what your insurance is, and you can tell them, and they will help you navigate a referral if you need one.
All right.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks, good luck. Linda.
Thank you for calling. Barbara in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Thank you. I'm calling on behalf of my 87-year-old mom who has spinal stenosis.
Yes.
And a pinched nerve at the L3 and L4. She did take a steroidal epidural injection, and she had some moderate success.
Okay.
Do you have any suggestions for other venues, you know, other things to look into to try to help her? Her pain mostly reports down her left leg.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is she living? Does she live independently, or is she where? What's her kind of?
She is in a senior apartment complex. I've been staying with her since this came to a crisis point. It just like kind of all of a sudden her legs were numb, trying to get out of bed to go to the bathroom. So I've been staying with her. Once she's up and around, she gets around. She has had a couple of physical therapy sessions. Those helped somewhat. Some things aggravate it because they also found out, finally doing an MRI, she has a vertebrae fracture, compression fracture.
Oh,
that
boy.
Is actually not painful. When they palpate it, she says, oh, you know, she's actually not having pain.
Wow.
directly from that. Well, she's tough.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So is there a pool?
And she's been very active. It's spinal stenosis and right. just, I mean, she skied up right. and downhill skier up until she was 76.
So is there a pool available to her?
Not immediately, but, you know, we can look into that.
A pool would be a great place
Absolutely.
For her to unweight her back, especially with that fracture, for her to get moving in an unweighted environment. There are a number of core strengthening exercises you can do. Walking, hanging, 15 minutes of hanging in the pool has been shown to increase your spinal height. So it unweights and opens up some of those spaces for your nerve roots to exit. So it's a really nice place for someone with her cluster of signs and symptoms to exercise.
Right.
Hanging in the pool. So
hanging.
You get by the edge of the pool
mm-hmm.
and just...
Yeah, with just a pool noodle or two underneath your arms and,
oh,
and your
see.
Forearms up on the edge and just let your legs dangle.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So to look into a physical therapy
yep.
place where
mm-hmm.
they have such
where they have
facility?
A pool. Uh-huh. Yep, where they have a pool.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And anything else as far as the epidural... Steroid injections, or
well, no,
she's
it's
pretty much bone on bone in
yeah,
most of
right.
her lumbar spine.
Well, you know, if she got moderate relief, you know, the idea is to capitalize on that and start to get her moving. So, you know,
okay.
getting her up and getting her moving, and then continue to talk with the physical therapist that she was seeing there. You said some things aggravated. You know, the PT needs to know that. So many times,
right?
When,
and she did, and she even backed off until and. Requested that they do an MRI because it
okay.
was not responding.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Exactly.
So,
so that's
that,
what we need
that
to
PT
do.
Would be a good place to
yeah.
start.
It'd be a good resource.
Right.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
You bet.
Good
Thanks
luck.
So much for calling. Lori Tyne Brody, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guest today from the University of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW. We are going to go now to Adam in Green Bay. Adam, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
So I have a question. I have been a recreational runner for the past 3 years, and I usually like to run anywhere between 3 to 6 miles a day on the treadmill. And about 2 weeks ago, I was running on the treadmill, and, you know, I experienced some pain kind of right in between my ankle and my knee, kind of right in the front on my tibia. You know, I'm 27 years old. You know, what are the chances that it would be a stress fracture? I've had shin splints in the past before, but it's definitely not in the right place for shin splints.
Okay.
I'd just like to get your thoughts.
Sure. Does it, so you said you had that pain. Has that pain gone away? Do you have pain with just walking around or only with running?
I do have pain with walking. It's very minimal. I can you know, it's kind of, you can feel it, but it's one of those things where I haven't ran last week since I felt it, just out of a fear that it could be. And I know sometimes too, the x-ray, if it is a stress fracture, sometimes it's kind of iffy if it picks it up. Is that correct?
That's true.
That's true. If you go in too early and you don't have calcium being laid down to promote the healing process, it won't show up.
Where in your tibia is this pain?
It's right, it's directly in the front, kind of right in between my ankle and my knee, so about halfway up.
So halfway.
More on the inside or the outside?
It's...
Or dead center?
It's dead center.
Okay. You know, that's not a common place for a stress fracture, so we'll start with
yep.
that. And you are in an age group where it's probably not... terribly common.
Right.
So, you know, on my differential, it would be there, but it probably wouldn't be at the top. So, you know, I guess I'd say you should go in and have it looked at. It could be, did you feel a pop or anything?
I didn't, no pop or anything like that, but when I moved my foot up and down,
mm-hmm.
You know, it almost, I can put my hand over there and it almost feels like there is fluid in there. I don't notice mm-hmm. any swelling or not. And,
okay.
and maybe
yeah.
it's maybe it's just more mental than anything, too. But
yeah, well, the muscles in there are wrapped in a fairly tight fascial sheath, so it'd be really hard to get a to get swelling. Are you getting any numbness or tingling or anything like that in your feet?
No.
Okay. And no other symptoms elsewhere. It almost sounds like a muscle or a fascial
right
strain.
Exactly. And I'm thinking of some lack of dorsiflexion mobility mm-hmm. at his talocrural joint or at his ankle joint. Mm-hmm. He's using those anterior mm-hmm. muscles a little bit differently. I feel mm-hmm. like you're doing this running on a treadmill, which is great, but I'm wondering if you need to have a gait analysis done and
right.
have somebody look at your running mechanics, make sure that you're in proper shoes. So, you know, this is somewhat new to you because you started 3 years ago and you've been running very consistently. So my suggestion would be to see a physical therapist, yep. take your running shoes with you, have mm-hmm. them do a gait assessment on you and see if they can identify something that could be causative for you.
Yeah.
There's lots of clinics in Green Bay that do gait assessment mm-hmm. and running analysis, and you just have to check with your insurance to see if they would pay for it.
Yeah.
But I would check into it because, you know, you've been very committed to this. You've been doing a great job and you've been on the shelf for a week and we don't want you to be out of activity
right.
any longer.
Right. But so. Just for the record, 6 miles on a treadmill, it's a lot. That's a lot of miles on a treadmill.
Yeah. How do you do that? That's mentally. You must have a TV.
Yeah.
I do have a TV.
Okay. And is it a pretty good treadmill that's got pretty good shock absorption or is it a pretty rigid?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. It's a pretty good treadmill and I'm pretty good about getting new shoes when
okay.
great.
All right.
And,
good.
And,
good.
And everything.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I would go with Jill's advice. I'd say I wouldn't stay awake at night worrying that it's a stress fracture. I'd go in and have this looked at and look at the soft tissue.
Sure.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks,
hey, let
Adam.
Us know.
Yeah. Call back next month.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have Carrie in Reedsburg as our next caller. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm 61 years old, and I'm fairly healthy. And I've developed something just recently where when I bend over to pick something up, I get a shooting pain up the inside of my right foot. It only is like for about an inch from the base of my foot near the rear of my heel, and it shoots up. And if I turn my foot, I've found if I turn my foot to the right and bend over, I don't get it. And it usually goes away in about 30 seconds after I stand up, and I don't feel anything when I'm walking. It's only when I bend over, and it's quite a sharp pain.
And it's you. It's your right foot, and you turn your foot out?
If I happen to turn my foot outward, I found this out because it helps me when I need to pick something up. Then I don't really feel it, or not as bad at least. It's only when my feet are straight and I'm just bending over normally that all of a sudden it just like shoots.
And any idea what brought this on? Any change in?
No, I have done a lot of walking in the last year. We did the Camino de Santiago last summer, which was a 500-mile walk.
Oh wow!
Jeez.
yeah, and we're hoping to do it again next summer. We loved it so much, so I'm hoping that this won't be a problem for me.
So,
but it felt like.
So if you poke around down there, if you're just sitting and you cross your ankle over your knee and you poke around there where you have your pain, does it hurt to touch it?
Not at all, no.
Okay.
I wonder if he's got
only with a stretch.
Only with a stretch, okay.
Only with a stretch.
Okay.
And with a stretch, you mean when you're bending over, your knees are
correct. Flexed.
And okay. Wondering if you have a little bit of neuromobility. There's your tibial nerve mm-hmm. is back there with your medial plantar nerve branches. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's a little bit of some tightness in your nervous system that just needs a little bit of mobilization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that flexion would load it.
Right, right. A little mobilization with movement
right,
thing.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're saying is that, you know, that you're describing somewhat nerve pain, but it's mm-hmm. such a local area, such a focal point. Sometimes our nervous system, like other things, can get hung up. And your nerves need to be, I like to use the word flossed. It's like flossing your teeth or glided. And that's something that a physical therapist could easily show you how to do. So based on where you live, I know there's PT in Reedsburg. I would suggest seeing a physical therapist, explaining this to them and having them do an assessment and see if they can give you some specific nervous system mobility exercises that I think could alleviate your symptoms.
Right. We were contemplating this before we got on. The first thing we thought was, well, this could be a disc coming from your back, but nothing else sounds disc-like.
Correct.
When we talk to you. And
right.
Then the other question as well, is it local? Do you have a little Achilles, either a bursitis there or a little bit of a tendinopathy? But you don't hurt there to touch. Those things would be palpably tender. So then you're kind of left with some other connective tissue getting hung up, and it could be nerves, it could be fascia, but whatever. Having a physical therapist look at it to figure out precisely what needs to be mobilized and giving you some things to do.
And especially if you're a walker and want to do this walk again, I would take in my shoes that I would be doing my walking in as well and have them look at that and make sure that those shoes are not contributing to this too, or make sure that you're in appropriate footwear.
Sure.
Good luck.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Marsha in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Marsha.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because, quite some time ago, I started developing a tightness in my legs right behind my knees. And it occurs primarily after I've been sitting for a while. And when I want to stand up and start to walk, it's like I don't dare start walking right away. I have to kind of stand there for maybe 30 seconds or so, and then I slowly start walking. I had talked to my doctor about this, and at one point he said as people get older that possibly you can develop cysts behind your knees, which I had never heard of before, but he didn't think that that was the problem for me. And I'm just wondering if there's some type of exercise that I can do. I do go swimming and or to the Y, and I do a water exercise class about four times a week. And after each class, I swim a quarter of a mile in the pool. But it isn't helping. So.
Okay. Well, there is a cyst you can get back there. It's called a Baker cyst.
Yeah, but I agree. It doesn't sound Baker cystish. It sounds arthritis-y.
Yes.
So, arthritis-ish, yes. So, typically after you've been sitting, your joints get stiff if you have a little bit of arthritis. So your joints are like the moving parts of your car. So if you're car sitting in the garage, the oil sitting in the oil pan, and the moving parts are not lubricated. You start up your engine and it takes, a few seconds for all the moving parts to be lubricated. That's not unlike your knee. So if you're sitting relatively stationary, the synovial fluid that bathes your joint surfaces sort of sits in the bottom of your knee joint. And when you stand up, it takes a little bit of time and movement for that fluid to get to the moving parts and lubricate those surfaces. So that's a fairly common symptom that we see. In terms of dealing with it, awesome for you to be going
right
to the Y and doing those exercises. So that's probably why your knees are, stayed as healthy as they have been. The other strategy we tell people, if you've been sitting for a while before you get up, just bend and straighten your knees a few times.
Mm-hmm.
Lubricate those joint surfaces for a little bit. Pump your ankles up and down, bend and straighten your knees, do a little bit of marching. Just get them moving a little bit before you stand up. It sometimes helps. And then
the pain isn't actually in my knees per se. I mean, I do have soreness in my knees because I'm going to be 72 soon. But, I do have soreness in my knees on occasion, but lately my knees have been feeling great. It just seems like it's behind,
right,
in the back of my leg.
Right. And what's happening is when you sit like that,
Your knee is bent.
And it's compressing back there. And so if you do have a little bit of irritation, you're kind of pushing those two irritated joints together. So,
right.
Yeah.
The more you bend your knee, the more compressive load you have on the back of your knee. As well as the connective tissue behind your knee, the back of your joint capsule, the ligaments, and then the muscles, like the hamstrings, are all in a shortened position. And then you stand up suddenly and stretch them the other direction. They're kind of like some stiff dough. It takes a minute to stretch them back out again. So,
Is there any other kind of exercise that I should be doing?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that. So there are a number of strengthening exercises, and there was some recent research that came out, again, reinforcing the importance of strengthening the hip muscles to help offload your knees. So although you're doing some strengthening in the pool, some land-based strengthening for the muscles around your hips and your knees can help you to take some of the load right. off of your knees with all of your daily movements, going up and down the stairs, walking, getting in and out of a car, getting in and out of a chair, and strengthening those muscles and improving their efficiency can take some of the load off of your knees.
That's interesting because about five years ago, I had surgery on my hip for muscle repair, abductor or mm-hmm. adductor. I forget mm-hmm. which one
abductor,
it was.
Abductor, probably.
Muscle repair. Uh-huh. And I know that I was supposed to have the other one taken care of, too, but I never did.
Mm.
So maybe my hips are part of the culprit.
A contributing factor, absolutely.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Yes.
So getting on a rehab program that you can do a few exercises at home, I think, would be a great strategy for you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you
so much. Yep. Good luck. Thanks for calling. And right along with that, Molly emailed to ask if strength training can help prevent arthritis in knees and wrists.
Well, that's a great question. Nobody looks longitudinally to, it's kind of like smoking, to answer that question, because they're not going to randomize people and say, you can't exercise and we're going to watch what happens to your joints over a lifetime. So what we know is that exercise can improve the mechanics and decrease the loads on your joints. So if you go back to a biologic perspective, we know that exercise can help maintain your body weight and decrease the loads on your joints.
There we go. And we will be continuing right up till 12:30 today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. We'll take a quick look at the news now and the weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. We are talking about physical therapy issues here with our two guests, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum and Lori Tyne Brody. Jill, Associate Professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy Program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Join in. Well, we've got open lines. You can get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Speaking of Facebook, Kate from Pewaukee, posted on Facebook that she fractured her clavicle last May. After the sling therapy was finished, she had physical therapy. Area is still uncomfortable. Now the doctor says it never healed and probably won't. She does have an appointment for a second opinion, but would physical therapy help relieve the discomfort? Is there anything besides surgery to help this heal?
Well, that's a great question. And it used to be that clavicle fractures were always managed conservatively. In other words, mm-hmm. the famous line is, if the two ends of the clavicle are in the same room, they will heal. But there's some surgical options that have proven to be a little bit better. Unfortunately, those really need to be performed pretty early after the fracture. So now that she has this basically non-union, I'm not sure what kind of surgical options would be out there for her. It's good that she's seeing someone. I think that's a really good idea. She needs to get as much information as she can. We don't know how old she is, nor do we know if this is her dominant side. So those are important factors to consider. But once she kind of gets the information from the physician regarding whether she is a surgical candidate or not, physical therapy would definitely be something that could help, because they may be able to increase mobility at adjacent joints. So she doesn't have to overuse that area and make sure that she has adequate strength around that area. And there may be some lifestyle modifications that we need to do. So for some people, weight bearing through their arms is incredibly painful. So planking, push-ups, things like that are difficult. We can find other ways to strengthen her core without irritating her shoulder.
Exactly. Yep.
Thanks very much for that Facebook question. Let's take some other calls here. Let's see. We've got Bonnie in Stoughton, I think, up next. Bonnie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was having a problem with my jaw, and I went to the dentist, and the dentist said that I probably had TMJ. And it turns out after he did x-rays, he said that I needed to see an oral surgeon.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my.
But, yeah, so I was a little skeptical about that. That's pretty invasive. Mm-hmm. So I went to my ENT doctor, who sent me to PT instead.
Yahoo.
Mm-hmm. And I'm doing that, and there is some, it's helping some with the discomfort, but my bigger concern is I have osteoporosis. And I was reading that the first place that settles is your jaw. And so they have not done a CT scan or an MRI, and I'm wondering if we should be looking more at that bone as opposed to the TMJ.
Oh, so your concern is that what you're actually dealing with is osteoporosis in that area and not TMJ itself.
Yeah, and I don't know who I go to diagnose that.
Are you on any medications like Fosamax or anything like that for your osteoporosis?
No, my doctor prescribed it last September, but I read the paper on the hazards of it, and it said that if you had a problem with your jaw, and I was having a problem with my jaw, so I didn't take it.
So you had the problem with the jaw before you took the medication?
Yeah, and I didn't take the medication.
Okay, all right. So my best guess is those two things are not linked. You can get a negative side effect from osteoporosis medication that causes, and it's more mandibular issues. And I believe that is more along like the gonial angle, and it's not so much up in your TMJ. Is your pain right in front of your ear?
Yeah, it's right smack in the jaw, and I cannot open my mouth anymore.
That sounds like TMJ.
TMJ,
that,
yeah.
I hear your concerns about the osteoporosis, but I don't think this is a factor. I think it's truly TMJ.
Yeah, and if you've been to a PT who has evaluated you and is aware of your osteoporosis, I'm sure that differential diagnosis has crossed his or her mind. And so if you haven't had a frank discussion with that PT about it, then certainly do that on your next visit. But I would continue with physical therapy for this. And sometimes it takes a while, and you can continue on that course and just be aware of the issues that you mentioned, and make sure your PT is aware of it as well.
And are you working on posture? Is that one of the things you're working with on, Bonnie? Not only just your jaw, but your posture, like where your neck is and things like that?
With PT?
Yes, ma'am.
No.
Okay, and that's probably something that should be addressed as well, because many people feel that the cervical spine and forward head posture is hugely related to TMJ. And so that would be something that you might want to mention to your PT, that not only we need to kind of step back and look at the whole big picture, I guess.
Yeah.
And it may be that the PT is sort of starting out with the most obvious things.
Absolutely.
And working their way through the process. And sometimes that's why PT takes longer, because you're dealing with multiple layers of an issue, which is also why we recommend that if you're having an issue, you go in early before we're dealing with three or four layers of the fallout from the original problem. Then it takes a really long time to sort out A, what's primary, and then B, working through all the secondary fallout from the original problem.
Yeah, there we go.
So I'd stay the course, Bonnie.
Yeah. Thanks, Bonnie. Appreciate the call. Todd in Menominee, we'll go to you next. Hi, Todd.
Yes, I have a comment about shoes. You're talking about the elderly slipping and falling and breaking things. And this year, they came out with a new shoe sole, Vibram, the manufacturer of shoe soles. They came out with a new sole, and it's called Ice Plus.
Ice Plus, okay.
And I've purchased these shoes, and I cannot slip. My son, we live on a steep hill, and my son has actually slid on his old Vibrams, and it'll go like 6 to 8 feet, and I just literally stopped dead on snow. I've been experimenting on wet ice, too, and they have grip. They're just an incredible shoe.
That's great.
Just to add that comment, and I'm not a shoe salesman. But
and you don't work for Vibram.
Vibram Ice Plus. And,
all right.
And unbelievable.
And can you roughly tell us how much they cost?
Well, these are Morels, and they are expensive. They're in insulated.
Oh.
Kind of like tennis shoe with 200 grams of insulation in, but the shoes were $140, and my toes don't get cold.
Okay.
I've played with that all my life, and a little neuropathy, too, so... These shoes are just unbelievable.
Well, and if you amortize that over, 7-8 years, you've definitely got your money's worth, and they'll probably last that long. So
there you go.
And so once more, what?
Ice Plus.
Yep.
Ice Plus.
By Vibram?
By Vibram.
So the other thing is we had a call a couple months ago on shoes from someone who lived in Alaska. Those were called ice bugs.
Yeah, these aren't ice bugs. They aren't, you know, it's, I don't think they have the grip of the chains you put underneath your shoes, but they're really, really close.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
an unbelievable shoe.
Yeah.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that recommendation.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for calling in.
I see him.
I wrote that down. Oh, okay, Vibram too. Ice Plus.
Ice yeah. Plus. Okay.
There we go. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it. Let's go to Sarah in Appleton next. Hi, Sarah.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
I was kind of curious if physical therapy would help my tennis elbow. I done the cortisone shot, and that gave me some relief for a while. And after that, I had heard about dry needling. I tried that, and that took care of all the secondary problems, which has arose from the primary problem. Now they're saying surgery, and I don't really want to do that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know, first of all, these darn what we call tendinopathies. This is lateral epicondylia, or kind of chronic overuse in your tendons that attach at your outside of your elbow, can be very, very problematic. And what research has kind of consistently shown that helps with tendinopathies, whether it's your patellar tendon or it's your lateral epicondyle, is eccentric strength training. So have you gotten on a good strength training program where you have to kind of overload the muscle? So you have to do a wrist curl and you have to lift a very, very heavy weight and then control it on the way down?
I have not, because it's all turned into now carpal tunnel also.
Oh, good God.
Oh,
okay.
My.
Well, but you can work around that. There's things that you can do to work around that. So the answer is I would absolutely, positively see a physical therapist before I would go to surgery and try surgery.
Absolutely.
And because here's the deal. Even if you have surgery, guess what? You're still going to have to do these exercises afterwards. So let's just go the conservative route and see if you can get by with the conservative route.
Right. And now that you have both of these things in one arm, someone needs to take a look at the big
neck.
Picture. Look at
your
neck and look at your workstation and see how you're working there. And then Jill's right, this eccentric exercise program. And it's a bit counterintuitive. And I have to tell you, I've been a therapist long enough. Yeah, and
she's older than I am.
Yeah, I know. She just had to get that in. And it used to be when these people with classically tennis elbow or patellar tendinopathy or Achilles would come in, we'd say, you need to do these strengthening exercises, but it needs to start at a level below the level of pain and work your way back up. Well, what we know now about tendinopathies suggests that that may not be the right approach.
Right.
That what we actually have to do is throw a lot of weight at it. And it's funny because I think back to many years ago when Bill Boisenault and I did this show. And people will call in and say, yeah, well, I had tennis elbow, and I tried all that PT stuff, and then I said, the heck with it. I went to the gym, and I lifted really heavy weights, and I got better. And I'd say, oh, how nice for you.
Right, exactly.
I'm wondering what on earth. And now we know there's science to show that this heavy eccentric loading can be the ticket to get people better.
Right, and I think what we have to think about is eccentric training, where you do heavy, heavy lifting, will
lowering.
Create... on the lowering phase will create what we call delayed onset muscle soreness, but that is the pain that you feel from that is very different from your elbow pain or your knee pain. And so I think we were ginger, we treated things very gingerly. Now we know that we can get aggressive with that strength training, and it's very important. So definitely see someone. Absolutely.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Julie in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi,
thank you, and I think we should clone you all.
Oh, thank
you. Good. One question I have is I have lower back pain, and I've had a couple of MRIs, and I guess nothing horrible other than some degenerative discs and bulging. I mean, it doesn't sound like nothing, but and bulging discs. And but he wants to do a lumbar medial nerve block on me, or an ablation, and I'm wondering what your experience and knowledge of that is.
So an ablation or just a plain old block?
Well, he wants to do the ablation.
Okay. Have you had a block? Have you had a...
No, I haven't.
Well, it seems to me that the first step would be to have a block or an epidural steroid or a local block to see if that's the source of your pain. it doesn't make sense to me, and maybe I'm missing something, to go in and ablate the nerve until you're sure that that's the source of your pain.
Right. You don't really know that that is 100% your pain generator. Like you said, there's a lot of things on your MRI, and all, some of them could be incidental findings. So you want to make sure that you're treating the true pain generator.
Exactly.
What he said was he would first go in and kind of like a test process and inject in those, and then I'd have to like wait around a few hours and just see how it was and if they hit the right spots, and I then see. The next time they would go back in and do the ablation.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, it does. That's a, yeah. like a two-step process. That yeah. makes more sense.
Have you been to therapy for this?
Somewhat I have. I also have some issues with bilateral IT bands, and so anyway, I'm not doing a heck of a lot right now.
Yeah. Okay. I would say if you haven't been to therapy for a while, to go in and revisit it and see if there's anything that you should do, any changes you should make before you go and start having a lot of interventions. Typically, we like to try some therapy first and see how far you get. And if you're not making any progress, then you go to that next level intervention. But, you know, in general, we don't like, you know, if you talk about three levels of intervention, as just as a generalization, you talk about therapy and injections and surgery, you know, you don't go in at level three until you've tried the other ones first. So if you haven't been to therapy for a while, I'd give that a try. See if you can make any progress and then weigh the pros and cons of going to the next level.
I agree.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Let's turn to Bob in Sheboygan next. Hi, Bob.
Hello. Yeah, my question is, I think I have drop foot. I've been seeing a chiropractor for it, and it started about 2 months ago, maybe, not quite. Don't know if I should keep seeing the chiropractor. It seemed like it was getting better, but my gait isn't, my walk isn't real straight. But then when I start lifting heavier objects, that's when I start to feel the numbness in my foot, and it gets heavier.
Yeah, no, you need to see somebody else. It sounds like you have a disc or a nerve issue starting in your back, and it has manifested to the extent that you can't pick your foot up, and at some point that can become irreversible. So I would see somebody immediately.
Yeah.
If it was going to get better on its own or just with chiropractic, you would be better by now. But 2 months, now it's time to switch gears.
Yeah.
That's the road I'm taking. So.
Good. Yeah. Good. Very good. That's a good plan. Let us know how you do.
And thanks again for calling. Paul in Cross Plains, let's go to you next. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a peripheral neuropathy that mostly is in my legs at this point, and I'm losing muscle strength in my legs, and I'm just wondering what I can do about that.
Are you diabetic, or what's the cause of the neuropathy?
They think it's just a hereditary thing. Okay. I'm not diabetic.
Okay.
So, yes, strengthening exercises. If you haven't seen a PT, you know, if you're not getting innervation to your muscles, it's really hard to strengthen them. You know, the nerves are like the wiring, you know, from the light switch to the light. So if your nerves aren't working very well, then it's hard to strengthen them. That being said, physical therapy can teach you strategies in terms of how you move to decrease your risk of falls. They can help strengthen the adjacent muscles that can help support you and help keep your gait and other daily movements as normal as possible, and talk to you about ways to maintain your general overall health in the presence of the neuropathy.
Right. And there's a really good PT clinic in Cross Plains.
Oh, there is a really good PT clinic in Cross Plains. What's it called?
Pro Physical Therapy.
There we go. Yeah.
That's good. My husband's clinic.
Oh. Yeah. Full disclosure.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Joan in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Joan.
Oh, Larry, I've got problems.
Sorry about that. Big laugh.
You know, I used to be strong as an ox. Well, I had an AC separation in one arm, a rotator cuff in the other, and I broke my back, so there's a nerve problem. But I recovered to ski in the Birkebeiner and be able to arm wrestle down every boy in class. But now I can't lift a teacup.
Jeez.
I have my physical therapist said you maybe should consider having surgery. Well, the surgeon for the neck said, yeah, the pain would go away, but there's a 50-50 chance you'd be dead.
Oh, oh well. Well, that doesn't sound like it. Those odds are not great, yeah.
So, but I had, he said, maybe you should consider having a shoulder replacement. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm almost 88, and that's kind of old. I haven't taken medicine, but the pain is so bad I could cry. But I do water therapy four times a week. I do all of the things. I even did what I used to do, and now is a special thing, according to People's Pharmacy, of taking the pain and throwing it away. But
good for you.
I can't do that anymore.
So how can we help Joan?
Well, there is shoulder replacements is a surgery, particularly a reverse total shoulder replacement for people who have significant pain with rotator cuff arthropathy. So if they have a significant damage in their rotator cuff, the outcomes from the studies are quite good. After reading them and scrutinizing them quite well, most patients have a little bit of limit in their range of motion. They may not be able to get all the way overhead, but mostly overhead, and people as a general rule function pretty well. So if her shoulder is truly the generating of her pain and not her neck, this may be something to consider. Mm-hmm. You just want to make sure that all that pain is truly from her shoulder, not coming from her neck.
And then in terms of the neck issues and the water exercise class, it might do well to have somebody review what you're doing to see if there's anything you're doing in there that might be aggravating it, or things that you should add that would be specific to your neck and shoulder complaints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There we go. Joan, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. We have Mary in Wisconsin Dells. Do you have kind of a quick question for us?
Hi. Yeah, I'm 62 and have been working out about a year now with a personal trainer and have felt really good. Except recently, my hips have been bothering me. I think it was brought on by a short stint on an elliptical.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't gone away. And
okay.
Walking, sleeping at night, I just can't get comfortable. It's been an issue. And I walk the dog maybe 3 times a day, a couple miles, and that's painful. The only thing that helps, like last night I took a couple ibuprofen and that helped, but I normally don't take.
Yeah.
Is it both hips?
Yeah.
And where in your hips? Is it deep inside? Is it in your groin? Is it on the outside? Is it in the back
it's
towards
on the
your
outside.
Buttocks?
Not,
on the outside.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the groin. And if I sit, getting up is, you know, painful.
Okay. Could be iliotibial band.
That's
or
what I'm
glute,
thinking. It's more.
Medius.
That's what I'm thinking. It's more muscular or tightness, which could have been. It could have been active. Activated by the
elliptical. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, the recommendation would be, here we are, to see a physical therapist for 1 or 2 visits and figure out where the source of your pain is from, and perhaps give you 2 or 3 exercises that you can do at home to help alleviate
it. Right. And maybe perhaps slightly modify whatever it is you're doing with your personal trainer, or work with your personal trainer to make sure everything you're doing is appropriate for your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. And Jill and Lori, as always, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here.
Look forward to your next visit on February 19th.
Perfect.
Jill Tye Nissenbaum, Lori Tyne Brody from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guests today. Great to have them along. And thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.